all my prior life experience prior to me starting a yarn company in a roundabout way led me to what I'm doing now. You know, understanding colors and saturation completely applies to dyeing yarn. It's very similar. And so everything sort of in this weird roundabout way has led to now. So even if you're flipping burgers, you're learning something. There's stuff to be learned in all your universe as an individual that you can bring to this industry.
That was Tina Whitmore, designer and owner of Freya Hand Paint Yarns, on this episode of Power Pearls Podcast, where you'll always hear candid conversations with everyday knitters and designers with compelling backstories. I'm Karagot Warner, host of Power Pearls and editor of Creative Knitting Magazine, and I will dig deep and ask the big question: why we started knitting and what keeps our needles going. Hey everyone, I want to welcome you to another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. And before we jump into this episode, I want to share a little bit of background about the person that you are about to meet. Her name is Tina Whitmore, and she is the owner, lead designer, and chief cook and bottle washer, as she likes to call herself, at Freya Fine Hand Paint Yarns, the premier dyers of long, gradient, and ombre yarns in the United States. Tina has been designing knitwear and accessories for over 30 years, and her designs have been published in American Vogue, Italian Glamour, as well as popular print and online knitting publications. She has been a guest on Knitty Gritty and Shea Pendre's Needle Arts Studio. More recently, she completed a selection of instructional DVDs for how best to work with gradient and self-striping yarns. Now, Tina and I, we go back quite a ways because I first met Tina in, I'd say, sometime around 2002, which was when I really started getting into the needle arts world and started designing professionally. And so I really saw Tina evolve quite a bit over the years, and we've also developed a friendship. And the other thing that's really cool about this episode is that we talk about, you know, when the going gets tough. So for any of you designers out there or any wannabe designers, you know, if you want to get started with designing, you know, and starting a business, this is an episode that you don't want to miss. But, you know, even if you're a hobby knitter and you're not interested in going down the design path, this is still a great inspirational episode to help you basically keep going when the going gets tough. And in life, we know that the going can really get tough sometimes, can it? Let's jump in and meet Tina Whitmore. Hey, Tina, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Cara. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is awesome because we have been trying for a while to do this interview. Like, you know, so it's like we've never been able to really kind of get our schedules right and whatever. So now we finally have been able to make it happen. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, finally. But I know. Don't have a drink in front of me, which is not so good. Oh. That's all right.
That's okay. It's just too early because I think it's like, what, 11?
It is early.
11 a.m. your time. Yeah. It's about 2 p.m. my time. But but yeah, you know, we'll make that happen again one of these days, because every time we go to a show, we're like, oh, let's try to grab a drink. And then,
you know. We haven't been able to do that lately.
I know. And I remember that time. We had such a fun time in Reno. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. In Reno over drinks. And I got to know, and I won't skip ahead here, but I got to know your process, like how you dye your yarn and how you spin your yarn, not spin it, but you wind it. It's a really cool process. So I'm going to ask you to share that. But, you know, we go way back. I feel like, you know, I remember when I was a new designer in the early 2000s, I guess, I met you and you were already like out there hustling and working it. And, you know, you hadn't yet started Freya, but, you know, you were designing, mm-hmm. and that was your thing. So, but I want to talk about two major areas, okay. You know, and so it's you wearing the designer artist hat, and then you as the yarn company owner, and also as you call yourself, the bottle washer.
Right.
Right. So you ready to dig in?
Yeah.
Okay, Tina. So I always like to start with this question. Can you share a pivotal or memorable moment that turned you on to knitting?
You know, I was so young when I started. I learned when I was about 7 years old from my grandmother's housekeeper, who I think just wanted to get me out of the way. And so one way of doing that was to give me some two sticks and string and say, here. And I took to it. I sort of played with it, I would say, what is what you do basically when you're that young. But in my mid-teens, there was an exchange student who came to my boarding school where I was a student in England, and she was from Germany. And she was really into it. And so I think I sort of re-caught the bug. So I have very strong memory of her knitting and her, she was doing these amazing, she was making a Farrell dress for her mother, I remember. And what always I found fascinating, and this is sort of an aside, she said it's very difficult because I don't know how tall my mother is. And I was like, what do you mean? And her mom was in a wheelchair. I just thought it was just beautiful. Anyway, and she made this incredible dress for her, and I think it inspired me to go with it. I mean, to sort of do my own, like get back into it again. And then, so probably from about 14 onwards, I have not stopped ever.
Wow. Isn't it? It's amazing because, so you said when you first learned, you were little, really little, right? But yeah, there might've been like this little period where you were like, and you threw the needles aside. But then when you were 14, you were so inspired by this, you know, person who was making this Farrell dress for her mother. So it was that thing. It was that thing that created the fire for you, right? Because I mean, I know for myself, it was the same thing. I learned when I was 12, and then I just said, I don't know. Like, I just let it go until later on. Mm-hmm. I was struggling in like finding my way in the career world. I didn't know where I wanted to go. And I just discovered knitting, mm-hmm, as like this kind of refuge and this thing that just put a smile on my, mm-hmm, face, you know, but it was like that was inspiring. And so for you, this was that time, right? And so from 14, really, like you just haven't stopped, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know. I wish I had known then that it could have been a career, because I didn't actually turn it into a job per se until, well, an actual like full-time job until about 2002. I mean, I did a lot of custom design work through my 20s for people, like making custom sweaters and stuff. But had I known earlier, I ended up going studying like biology and then going to art school, and I have a bachelor's degree in photography. But had I known, I probably would have gone to like fashion school in London instead and gotten more knowledge at an earlier age. Let me put it that way. Hopefully I would have still ended up where I am now, because I'm very happy where I am now.
Oh yeah.
But that sort of like, I should have known. I didn't know you could get knitting degrees. And I currently have three employees that all have knitting degrees, or it's not textile, they're actual like knitting focused degrees. And one of them is actually taking a master's program in knitting right now, and I'm a little bit envious.
Wow, that is amazing. Like, okay, so because I went to art school, you know, I went to Parsons. I don't know if you've heard of Parsons.
Yeah.
So, and I was an illustration major. Mm-hmm. And so I remember like later on, they started a knitting program, uh-huh, because, you know, Parsons is known for fashion, right? And they had nothing. They had no knitting whatsoever. And now, like you're saying, I mean, I feel the same way. It's like, oh my gosh, like you can go to school now and right, become, you know, get a degree in knitwear design.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting though. But is there a real career path for that, as far as, you know, can you go to school and learn how to, you know, write patterns and, you know, market yourself as a designer? Because I remember when you and I started professionally, because, mm-hmm, for me, it was right around 2002, 2004. Mm-hmm. I learned everything. And I think I've met you on that, remember that Yahoo group, mm-hmm, Knit Design?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I literally, I'm not kidding you, I printed a binder. At the time, like of every email at that time, there were about 15,000 emails.
Oh my goodness.
I read every single one from 1999 to maybe it was earlier, to 2002 or whatever it was.
I remember actually you wrote a comment on the that you had done that, and I was kind of floored by that. I'm like, oh my goodness, that is amazing. I mean, and I had gone back and probably read most of the messages too, but I didn't actually print them out, and I probably skimmed them, and I'm sure you actually like read them properly.
You know what? And it's amazing. It was an education.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned everything about how to become a knitwear designer on that group.
Yeah.
And I just took the morning, like every morning for I don't know how many months it took me. And I had my cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, just paid like, cause I enjoyed it. And I was just like, this is all I'm doing. I'm going to sit here for an hour or two and read email after email. And I just remembered where I left off the day before. And that's how I did it. Because I'm the kind of person, you know, where you get into something. Yeah. And you're like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, I need to wrap my brain around the entire thing. So going back was how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a shortcut. I mean,
sort
of, you know, you can go to school and learn all this stuff that you and I were, we had a, it wasn't available. It wasn't available back then.
Well, there was
like
no Ravelry, you know, so I think you can get that sort of education on Ravelry in a way. You know, and obviously, yes, there are like college. I mean, I taught college level. I taught at City College in San Francisco. I taught knitting. I didn't teach pattern writing, though. But, you know, I think I mean, I did kind of go over it with my students because I would give them patterns and I would say, this is what it looks like. This is what you, but no one, I don't know that anybody from my, well, I do have one student I'm actually still friends with. And this is, I was teaching years and years ago. And I think she does do some design work now. But I learned on the fly. I mean, my learning was from reading primarily Rowan knitting patterns because I just think they're so well written.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where that was my college.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, I know we're kind of going down a different path, but hey, that's what I love about, you know, having these kind of conversations. But, you know, so if someone were, listening right now thinks, oh, wow, like I could go to school to get a degree in knitting. Is it more of the, is it on the design business side or is it more of the academic scholarly side of knitting?
Well, I think,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, if I think of St. Martin's in London or RISD or these places, I mean, my understanding of the course is that you don't actually go and learn to be a pattern designer, like writing patterns for magazines like Creative Knitting or so on and so forth. You're actually becoming a fashion designer.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Or the design. So I mean, I do have students who don't actually know how to. Some of my employees who are fashion students, knitting degree students. I mean, sorry, I'm trying to get my words muddled. they don't necessarily know how to write a pattern, but they can create, you know, amazing things. They do learn pattern writing, like cut and sew pattern writing, but that's a different thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that you can necessarily learn to be a knitwear designer selling knitting patterns online. That you probably still have to get through, you know, learning from somebody else, maybe, or I don't know, trial and error experience. I mean, I do think Ravelry is there, you know, and people can publish a pattern that way. But
Yeah, I think you're right about Ravelry, you know, coming in. I mean, we can have a whole conversation about that on, you know, a lot of different levels. But, you know, as far as opening the playing field for people to come in and learn about knitwear design, you know, some of the advice, like anything is good and some of it's bad.
Right, exactly.
You know, and you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt, you know, because there are designer groups and all kinds of groups in Ravelry. It's absolutely insane what you can discover, you know. But then, you know, the other side of the coin is everyone is calling themselves a designer.
Right.
And then, like, you know, I think like what you were just talking about, if you go to school to study knitting, it's more of like your couture, like you're a fashion designer and you understand garment construction. And that's something I talk about a lot on the podcast and in these new things that I'm doing. I'm calling it the Power Pearls Unplugged. Mm-hmm. And I just recently talked about this on Facebook Live, and it was, you know, that if you want to design garments, especially garments, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not at that level yet, then don't do that. You know, design accessories, right, whatever. Right. But to design a knitted garment, you got to understand garment construction. Yeah. You know, you've got to. You can't just, you know, draw a pretty picture and then wing it.
Right.
Because it'll be discovered right. in your pattern.
Right.
And then it'll be a nightmare for you and for everyone else. But I mean, I think that's where the hard work comes in. Like anything, you get excited. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, now I got to really dig in mm-hmm. and dig deep if I really want this, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So,
I think if someone wants to be a knitting garment, like to make sweaters, especially like a fitted sweater, for example, I mean, you really have to understand garment construction. And that's why I don't do that. I leave that for other people because I would like to. I haven't had the time to gain that knowledge. And so I do have, I mean, I have designers, again, I mean, I have the people that work for me who do know that, and they do have that knowledge, and they've designed some incredible things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's the thing also is to, you know, work. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm all for pushing boundaries. I mean, I think you know that, but I think you push where it makes the most sense. And sometimes you have to sort of step back and go, okay, maybe that's not where I should be focused, or my attention could be better doing this instead. And,
mm-hmm. and that's why I think you are, you know, really an example as a business owner, you know, because I've seen you grow over the years, and, you know, that's you saying, hey, my strengths may not be in this, like meaning we're talking about garment construction mm-hmm. or designing garments. So I'm going to let the people that do it really well do it. And, you know, work with me, and we'll make it happen that way. So that's wisdom. You know, that's really, really smart, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to see the forest for the trees, or, yeah. well, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you want to put your hand into everything, but you may not have the strength to do it. So then you're putting yourself in a place of weakness mm-hmm. when you think you can do everything,
right.
you know? And so, and anyway, that leads me to kind of where I want to go next with our conversation, because, you know, I look at you as one of the real entrepreneurs in this industry, you know, because you just keep moving forward. And your quote, the quote you sent, you shared a little quote with me, and I want to read it. It's going to be in the show notes for anyone listening, because I think it's really very poignant. But I also, I'm going to ask you first, though, okay. have you ever read the book called The Dip by Seth Godin?
No, but I'm going to write it down right now.
You should, but I mean, I think you are practicing this in your life, but
okay.
it's also a great reinforcement. Like, I got it from the library today. Mm-hmm. I'm almost done with it. It's that small. It's
okay.
Because, like, for me, like, so then if you're, because I know you're a busy lady, so you could read this in, like, you know, in an afternoon, not even, like, 2 hours uh-huh. and you're done.
Okay.
But basically, I'll just share a little bit. So the book, the whole idea is, you know, you start something, you're really excited about it, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's all that momentum and the rose-colored glasses are on, and then you're like, you go into this thing called the dip. Mm-hmm. He calls it the dip. And Seth Godin has written several books. Like, he's, you know, just so well-known in the business space, the indie space. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so he talks about going into this dip where you're like, this is where it really counts, where you have to really stay focused mm-hmm. and fight through it. Mm-hmm. Like, but when you're in the dip, like you can't quit, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you have to keep going. And that's when it really, really matters. Mm-hmm. But in the book, he also talks about quitting and knowing when it's wise to quit mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because, you know, you might want to build the space shuttle, but you don't have the ability to build the space mm-hmm. shuttle. And then you get into the dip and you're like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I can't build the space shuttle. So, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So it's really cool. And so I'm reading this and I'm like, wow, this is perfect timing, because I'm talking to Tina mm-hmm. because I look at you as someone who has survived the dip.
Yeah. I don't quit.
You know?
I don't, I'm stubborn. I'm really stubborn.
Yeah.
I just, I just keep plowing on.
So I want to read this quote, and then I'm going to ask you at the end a quick question about how you persevere through it. Okay. So here it is. I live and breathe what I do. If you start something and it takes off, really takes off, you will probably lose any sort of work-life balance. For me, my work is my life, so I'm okay with it. But it can be hard and a lonely path, as no one outside of this field really will understand what you do and what it takes to make it a go, make it go. So I want you to dig a little bit deeper, you know, regarding this and share how you keep going when the path gets lonely, because you mentioned that lonely path. And how do you persevere when you hit that dip? You know, when you're sitting in your office by yourself, you know, like this is when it really counts. Like, how do you work through the dip?
Well, I think with what I've done is I don't really have a choice, because I now have, you know, I sell to X number of stores and they need my yarn. So I don't have a choice. I have to keep going, because that's just what, you know, what you do. That shouldn't come across as negative, because it's not a negative thing at all. I do it because I want to be doing it. I love what I do. It's a lot of work. I mean, especially, you know, the type of dyeing that I do, it's incredibly labor intensive. You know, and from start to finish, there's, you know, I have 10 employees and you know, let's say 8 of them touch every single ball of yarn at some point. I mean, I don't know. One thing that keeps me motivated when the sort of the going gets tough is I'm always looking to improve the process. So for me, it becomes like a game. It's like, okay, so how can we make this better? How can we, you know, make the quality better, make the process faster, you know, have, be more efficient, you know, this, that. I mean, it's a constant. So yes, I have a yarn company and we're dyeing yarn and we're, you know, surrounded by this beautiful yarn and incredible colors. But at the same time, I'm like, maybe I'm a process person, quote unquote, whatever that is, you know, because I really, really enjoy constantly improving what I do. So maybe that's how I handle the sort of the dip, because it is, you know, that when there's a moment where a dip, another word for that would be almost like stagnation.
Well, yeah, I think it's more like when you're down in that dark valley, you know, like how do you rise above, or how do you pull through? Like, how do you get out so then you can kind of get back up that mountain?
I don't, I don't really have, I think I don't feel like I'm ever really in a super dark valley. I have seen people be in that space, not at my company per se, but I've seen people around me in the industry definitely do that, because it's a very challenging, it's a very challenging career. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, anybody can dye yarn at home. So there's theoretically a lot of competition. And how do you differentiate your product from other people's products? And I think, you know, we have a lot that we bring to what we do that is, you know, quality and, you know, at many different levels, I think we produce an excellent product that is, I'm going to sound horribly vain or something, but I think we just make a really good product. And that's, you know, well, okay.
But you have to believe, of course, that's what you have to believe.
Well, yeah.
I think that it's the self-defeating thing that happens. You're like, yeah, my product is, yeah, it's mediocre.
Yeah, I would
like, it's good, but it's really like, you know, you don't really feel that way. So no. Like, you're already setting yourself up for that problem later.
Well, I think if someone's in that state of mind, they probably should be doing something else. If you're like,
absolutely,
it's kind of okay, no, then you're not in the right place, then do something else. I think, and it's not even believing, it's actually like offering. It's not like, I think it's okay. It's like, if it's just okay and you know it, then do something else.
Yeah,
I'm
and that's
talking about knitting. I'm talking about life in general, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, and that's what Seth Godin talks about in this book, like knowing when to quit, you know, because if you're like, you're doing some, let's say you're whatever in life or with knitting, you're creating this product because, you know, yarn, and you're like, well, it's okay, but everyone else has a hand paint company, and you're just like, then, you know, that's when you need to maybe find the wisdom to say, maybe I need to get out of this.
Well, or you know, what can I do to differentiate myself from other companies? So it's not necessarily, okay, you suck, so quit.
Yeah.
It's also like, you know, how can I make it better? And I mean, that's my point where I'm always in that position of, that's when I hit the dip, I would say, is if there's not evolution happening in my company constantly, if we're not constantly evolving and improving and changing our process. I guess I'm probably like super excited right now because I've got this new yarn coming out. We just found a new way of dyeing our yarn that is hugely time saving, which is what we desperately need all the time because we have such a great demand. So I'm on this kind of high right now that like I've solved all these problems this week, but I need to solve problems all the time because that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps the fire going. Cause I get really excited like, oh wow, we can do it this way. And it's so great. And I do have like very smart employees around me who, you know, I don't want them to come to me with a problem. I want them to come to me with a solution. We all know what the problems are, you know, it's like, okay, yes, I get it. But, you know, come to me with an idea. Let's work on an idea, you know? And so we just had a little sort of breakthrough last week, which is, I'm like super happy about. So in terms of the dip or that sort of point, it's like, so if you're at that point, look at what you can change maybe, or that's how you climb out, because then you're on an upswing, so to speak. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
I don't really get into those valleys. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like when I say it's like a lonely path, I mean, I think knitting, you know, I mean, obviously there's, you know, the groups that you can get together and knit with a bunch of people, but knitting can also be quite insular and solitary is a word, but I don't mean it in a negative connotation. You know, and so it's, you can be alone, but not lonely.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, no, absolutely. Because I tend to think of knitting as a very contemplative practice,
yes.
You know, and so, just that it can be in a very meditative thing and, you know, just sitting and listening to your needles in silence while you're, you know, kind of going around, you know, around and around, you know, especially with circular knitting. I find that to be, there's something really powerful about that kind of seamless knitting.
Yeah.
You know, and I've actually had this conversation with a previous guest that it's almost like prayer beads in a way, if you're familiar with that, or rosary beads or whatever, but like you're moving beads with your round and around with your finger and that there's something very powerful, and very kind of, you know, at your core, kind of this visceral experience.
Right.
I can't fully put it to words, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, you know, I mean, I have these long, crazy days where, you know, I work ridiculous hours and I come home and, you know, walk the dogs, feed myself. And then I sit down and knitting is, it's still work because I'm usually producing a design or an idea or working on an idea, but it's definitely, I'm unwinding. And
are you doing anything for yourself though, as far as your own kind of hobby knitting, or would you say it's always designing?
Well, I mean, I work on designs that I like. I mean, that of course, hopefully most people do. I always have this idea that I'm going to make a sweater for myself or a scarf for myself. And then I don't know. I mean, part of it, like, okay, so with this new yarn, for example, I've made like 6 scarves with it or something, different designs, because I'm just so crazy in love with this yarn. But I live in California and it's, you know, 100 degrees here right now. So I can't wear these things. They're piled all over my house and we have them in the studio and everyone's been knitting with this yarn, but we can't wear it because it's too hot. So yes, come winter, I will be wearing all of these garments. so yes, but they are, you know, I mean, it's a lot of sample knitting also for the company. I mean, that's the thing too. If I get inspired by a yarn, I'm on to the next idea before I finish the last one. So I'll make a sample for the company and, you know, I'll think, okay, I'll make one for myself, but it doesn't often happen that way because I'm moved on to the next concept. So,
I think that happens to a lot of us, especially creatives, you know, because like for me, when it comes to, let's say, putting together a new issue of the magazine or designing, because I still design, but only every now and again, if I feel like it, because I don't have to now, you know what I mean? And it's that it's putting it down on paper and swatching and, you know, just that fire, that excitement, that passion for like that beginning. Because then once you have it on the needles and you're like, especially if it's a garment and you're like in the middle of the front or something, and you're like, okay. And then you're on to the next thing.
But that's the dip right there. That's the, oh gosh, so I've got to like finish this thing. Or do I, or do you, you know, that's when theoretically you could hand it off to, you know, a sample knitter.
Exactly. No. And I think that is different than the dip that, like, if you're like in it, like, yeah, you hand it off. Like the wise person would say, okay, if I'm going to be a business person with this, I'm going to hand it off to a stitcher. And I remember when, it's funny, you know, Kim Dolce. So when, cause you know, back in the day, she was my mentor, when I was starting out, and I'll never forget her words. You know, when I was, you know, a brand new designer and I was knitting all of my samples, you know, and she said, mark my words, Kara, in a year from now, you will no longer be knitting your own samples. And she was right. She was right, because you know what? It saved my passion. It saved my love for knitting.
Oh, interesting.
And I just put it down on paper and I said, you know what? I'm going to have confidence that what I put down on paper with the skills that I have as a pattern writer, that, you know what? That sample knitter, because they, you know, picked a good one, you know, that, you know, test knitter, she'll do it and she'll come up, you know, she'll let me know, hey, this is wacky. And then we work it through, you know, and that's how it works. And I think that any designers out there, wannabe designers listening, you know, that's what you got to do. You can't sit and knit all day long, you know, knit your designs and think you can be a business doing it too. Yeah. So anyway, that's again, another conversation.
But I would say I'm probably a selfish knitter because I actually do want to finish it, but I will have, you know, like a sample knitter make another sample later on. But I'm too selfish, I think, and to stop and say, oh, I'm going to give it to someone else to knit, because I want to see it progress and I want to see it, I want to finish it myself. So that's probably why I'm better at having a yarn company as opposed to being a designer that produces patterns for magazines, because I would be the one, I'd be like, oh no, I would have a hard time letting it go for a sample knitter. Probably, well, I would learn obviously, but clearly that's a step I haven't learned yet. I know intellectually that's what one should do.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you should never do it, but it's like putting it into perspective for yourself. If you're designing and you're like, oh, no, I have to make another sample. No, you don't. No, you don't. No. And you know, so I was going to ask you, do you, when you do design, do you do it on the needles?
Yes.
Or do you, And that's cool. I mean, that's a very organic way to design. It's extremely flexible and it's a very artistic way to do it, I think. So I'm just curious, because I just kind of suspected that that was what you did.
Yeah. But that's also why I don't do sweaters, because, you know, I'd be like 3/4 into it and I'd be like, oh, I got to change this and start over. So, you know, smaller things.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit here. And now I want to talk about your yarn process, because you kind of a little touched on it. But I want to talk about Freya Hand Paint Yarns. That's, we haven't decided how. Freya Hand Paint Yarns, right? So I want to talk about the way you produce your yarn, because it's very unique. Because I think that you're, you know, others have kind of knocked you off, I think. Because you're such an innovator when it comes to the way you wind it, you dye it, and this ombre process, right? And that's kind of how it's bleeding into the next color and the next color, if I'm correct about that. So talk about this, because you explained this to me over drinks in Reno, and I thought it was so fascinating. So I think that it's worth sharing here for the listeners, too.
I can tell you a little bit. I'm not going to divulge, like,
I mean, just, okay, no, because no, I wouldn't expect that, but just a little bit about, you know, your special process. Yeah, go for it.
I mean, when I started doing it, I started out doing self-striping yarns, which are fairly easy to do. There's a number of companies doing that. So when you have a ball of self-striping yarn, you have a long length of color, maybe 30, 40 yards, let's say from 10 to 30 yards in a ball. So when you have a gradient yarn or an ombre yarn, it's, you know, five times that before it starts to transition. So you end up with a much slower gradation. Now, you know, the trick comes in not having it be a sudden break in color. I mean, I've seen some yarns be marketed as an ombre where literally there is a knot and someone's attached another ball of yarn.
Shameful.
It becomes, and they'll say in their marketing, balls of yarn or several colors tied together. But then it's called an ombre and I'm like, okay.
I don't know. Anyway.
And there are a lot of hand dyers that are doing gradient skeins, where you can, pot dye or cattle dye a large amount of yarn, and then you tie off into smaller skeins that, are color flow. Let's say all blues for like a denim colorway or something. And that works, and then the person who's knitting, would join the different balls together. I mean, what we do is we try and, when you look at our ball of our yarn, it looks like it maybe has four or five colors, but actually there's double that for us to get the gradation happening, or triple that even. Triple that sometimes. It depends on what we're doing. So we have, I don't even know how many bottles of dye that we work
with
for one ball of yarn to get that smooth transition. But so how I got from the self-striping to the gradient was I had to do it, well, I didn't have to, but I did a giveaway for a retreat, and I took these self-striping balls of yarn and I broke them down from a 50-gram ball, and I made little, like 5-gram balls. And each little ball, they were adorable. They were tiny
things.
And each little one was a little ombre ball, because it was only going from like one color to another color. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I want to be doing. So I transitioned immediately I kept the self-striping. That's still a part of the business. But my focus definitely went from there to gradient yarns, because, there was nothing like that on the market when I started that I knew of.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a whole, it's at the time, it was completely unusual. I think, like you say, there's a number of people doing it now.
And so would you say, though, that, so gradient is the same as ombre, that the same kind of definition?
Yes and no. I mean, I think, I'm sure there's quarrels about this. From how I define it, ombre is the French word for shadow. So I see ombre as being light to dark. Gradient could be anything, any kind of color. You could have like a rainbow gradient, for example, whereas ombre might be different shades of blue. That's just me and my personal, how I define it. I don't hold it. I use the terms interchangeably. I think probably people use the term gradient more often than they do ombre. If you enter ombre on your iPhone, it'll default to ombre, the Spanish word. But I think gradient's a more commonly used term now.
And so when you start with one color, that's it, right? It goes for, like you said, I don't know how many yards. So just to kind of describe, when you're holding a ball of Freya, yarn, it's like a yarn cake. Is that the right way to, or like, it looks like a pull skein.
Yeah.
You guys know what a pull, and it's not a skein the way that you see like a twisted skein or a ball. And I think it's so unique, and it shows off exactly what your process is, because it's like, you've got this saturation that starts in the center of color, and it's one color, and then it bleeds, if you will, into the next color and the next color. So you don't go back to that first color ever again in that skein. Is that correct? Or maybe you can.
So when I started doing the self-striping yarns, what I found was I had been working with other self-striping yarns, and I found, a few things. I wanted a yarn that was softer. I wanted a yarn that hopefully wouldn't have knots in it, or breaks in the color was more particular, because a lot of times the existing yarns, with the equipment that was used to make them, if there was a break in the if there was a problem with the yarn as it was being made, there would be a break and a knot, and you'd have a sudden jump from one color to an entirely different color. And so I wanted to not have that be a problem, because then what you have to do if that does happen is then you have to like fish through the ball to, find the right color and reattach it, and then you end up losing a bunch of yarn. And then the other thing I wanted to be able to do was to pick up the next ball of yarn when I was finished with the first and just keep going. So with my self-striping yarns, they do actually start and end with the same color, though they don't. It's basically a series of colors. It does not bounce back at any point. It's just like a single color flow with the start, the beginning and end being the same color. Mm-hmm. With the gradient and the ombre yarns, they start and end with different colors. So if you wanted it to kind of go back, you would then have to like reattach from the opposite end, you know, mm-hmm. from that the matching color on the next ball of yarn. When we wind them and we send them to stores, we wind half one direction and half the other direction. So it looks like they can almost look like two different colors of colorways entirely, but they're not. It's the same one. It's just one wound. Mm-hmm. One is wound with the opposite color on the outside. I've had requests from some stores for display purposes to have them be in skeins. But I've always said, mm-hmm. I'm like, that the customer won't know that it's a gradient as opposed to a self-striping yarn if it's in a skein. Because it doesn't show. So I am pretty flat out like, nope, we don't do that. It's extra work for us. Clearly. I mean, I would save so much time if all we had to do was skein it, you know, it'd be great.
Sure, sure.
But we do wind them into cakes. And like I said, so when a shop buys them, they buy them in bags of six or four, whatever, and then half are wound one direction, half are wound the other. And so it's kind of fun mm-hmm. also because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, you can see, you know, so you can look at the ball, like looking top down kind of thing, and you can see basically the full range of colors start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I'll do sometimes, you know, when I work with your yarn is in the same cake, you know, I'll pull from the top, right? Mm-hmm. And then from the outside so I can work two strands together if I want to get to the two colors or uh-huh. whatever. So there's lots of different ways. And I've also been like, oh, I want that color. And I'll just wind it up. Okay, there it is. Now I'm going to start using that color. I'm naughty that way. Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot of different ways, you know, to do it, of course, if we're creative, and we are all are creative knitters. So when the listeners go to your website, we'll kind of give that information at the end, and they can clearly see, if they're not familiar with your yarns, they'll be able to see what those balls look like. So tell me what the new season looks like for fall, because you just mentioned there's a new yarn
yes.
coming out. You have a new yarn. You're really excited
yes.
about it.
I'm obsessed.
So what can knitters and yarn enthusiasts expect for fall from Freya?
We are dying our little hearts out right now, working on I had custom spun for me it's a single ply U.S. merino, which means it's a cruelty-free merino, which is nice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also really big on having as small a footprint as possible, so I don't want my yarn, you know, before I get it, flying all over the world and back. So it comes from the U.S. It's the sheep live in the Rockies. It's spun here in the U.S. And then we get it and we dye it. And so, yeah, it's a single-ply merino fingering weight. And it's a dream. It's just a dream. So far, it exceeded my expectations of what it was going to be. And it's, you know, it's dreamy soft. It's definitely against the skin softness. And I'm one of those people that I'm kind of like, yeah, it's a little bit itchy. I can't do that. And this, I could sleep in it.
Really?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Well, I love that you say that, you know, it doesn't have a big footprint and that, you know, the yarn is spun here and all that good stuff because that is near and dear to my heart, you know, and I think you and there are other yarn companies coming out that are just really talking about that, the sustainable, you know, end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, the responsibility thing, because, you know, there is cruelty happening in the yarn industry. And so, and I just think we don't have to talk about that, but I mean, I like that you're showing that there's an alternative.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is this yarn available now?
Not immediately. It's going to start shipping to stores in September. The other thing that we're doing that's different with this yarn is that I'm calling them shawl balls because they're slightly larger balls we're doing them than I've done in the past. So one ball is about 420 yards, 430 yards. So you can actually get you know, a decent sized something around your neck with it. And if you use two of them, then you're definitely, you know, well covered, so to speak. And I'm offering the 100 gram balls in all the yarn yarn colors. So including the self-striping yarns, I'm bumping that. That's always been sold only in a 50 gram ball. So we're bumping that up to 100 grams as well. And then we've also got, you know, all our solids that we're doing in it as well. So it's just like a huge thing that we're doing with this yarn, because I wasn't even going to do solids with it at first. And then as I started knitting samples, I was like, I need a solid to work with this. And then I went to one of my assistants and I was like, I'm so sorry, but we're going to have to do solids. And she's like, yeah, I know, I needed one too. because we're dyeing it right now, and it's going to start. Well, actually, I have one box going out today to a store in Canada that has some in it. But basically, it's going to mostly start shipping in August and September. And should be fairly widely available, because a number of stores did order it from us at the TNNA show. And I think it's going to do really well.
I did not have a chance to stop by your booth at TNNA. I did. You know, we tried to do like an impromptu, interview, which was so silly of me to even think because you are just so busy, and it's great. Obviously, that's why you're there. But I didn't get to touch and feel this yarn at all. And so it would be really great to,
I can remedy that.
To be able to. You can. Huh? I know. I'm like hinting. You know, hey, because it would be great to, you know, obviously get it into a project in the magazine too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you could, that would be awesome. That would be great. Oh, I can't wait.
The other thing we did was neon. So if you want neon, I could send you a crazy neon color, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest. I'm not too keen on neon, unless you think like, yeah, this is it. Neon. I remember a couple years ago, it was like kind of coming back, but I don't know if that's the creative knitting audience.
No,
I don't know.
I tell you what I did that's different, because I mean, I was like a little punk rock kid. Neons bring me back a little bit to my, you know, misspent youth. But what I did for these ones is, you know, there are a lot of companies currently producing neons. It's clearly a thing. You know, I did see it in a few places at TNNA. So we're all on some sort of collective unconscious neon vibe right now. But what I did that was a little different with these is there's just a small amount of neon in the ball. And you asked me about, you know, how the yarns transition if it comes back to a color. With the neons, I've never done this before, they kind of go out and back. So it goes from like these sort of pastel-y colors into a dark. So like the purple one goes from like a lavender into a dark purple and then into this like flash of neon purple. And then it goes back into the dark purple and then the lavender. So it's... they're different. I call them wearable neons, because there's only a small amount of actual like super neon in there, and the rest is like this sort of flowy purple color. And then there's a green one and an orange one and a yellow one. I'm not trying to push them to you for creative knitting. I agree. I'm not sure that that's your audience, but neons are fun within, you know, I don't know. I mean, you can go like all out and go crazy with them, and you don't have to by any means. And some people will love them and some people won't. It's definitely a personal thing. I will say that ours glow under black light, which is...
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? Because I'm always, you know, thinking about what the possibilities could be. And, you know, like I was thinking of doing a kids knitting chapter. That might be fun for kids, or something that's more... crafty-ish, you know, but I'm intrigued. I would love to see, you know, maybe send me your best neon sample.
I'll send you a couple and then, things to play with, and you can decide. I'm not going to hold you to it.
No, because the thing is I'm, yeah, like I said, I'm very open-minded. I will say no to, I won't say no, you know, I'm always looking past the obvious, you know what I mean? So, yeah,
These are more fun, you know. I mean, I think if you're going to, you know, invest time and energy and money, you know, to something that you want to wear for a very long time, you know, you may fall out of love of a neon, you know. I also I was attracted to the neons because at the time when I was working on this concept, you know, it gets dark in winter. I walk my dogs at night and I was like, oh, this isn't safe. You know, I wanted to be more reflective and it's cold. So I'm like, oh, a neon scarf, that would be something, you know. So that's kind of where it came from as well, a little bit. So purely selfish reasons.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm laughing because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if I'm driving and you see somebody with this like neon, you know, scarf or whatever, like wearing this, I think it might be a little bit shocking, you know, but and I just had a vision. But anyway.
Do you still do your 5 a.m. morning runs?
You know what? I don't run at 5, but I do get up early, and I get up and I would say I run right around 6, a little bit before 6, maybe like about, I try to start getting ready like about 10 to 6, and I'm usually out the door at 6.
Oh, gosh.
But in the summer right now, but it's not dark now.
Yeah, of course.
But you know what? You're making me think. I mean, now there's no excuse.
I'm just teasing you.
I know you are. But so I just wanted to also say for anyone listening that doesn't know what TNNA is referring to, I always like to say this because I know we talk a lot about it, but it's the National Needle Arts Association trade show. And so this is where shops go to buy yarn and supplies and needles and all that for like the coming season. And so I was just there in Washington, D.C., and Tina was there as well. And so it's all about, back in June, it was all about the fall buying season and what's trending, what's coming up for the fall winter season in knitting. And so, you know, these are the things that people will start seeing in their yarn shops and, you know, the other stores out there like Joanne Michaels and that sort of thing. So I just wanted to mention that really quick.
The other thing actually I would say, sorry to
it's good.
I noticed something over the summer. There was I saw it was at Joanne's or Michaels. It was one of those. It was an ad I saw, and it was really funny because they said, you know, we have this new ombre yarn. And I don't remember what the company was. It was selling in one of the big box stores, and I don't remember the yarn producer, but they were calling it an ombre yarn, and it was a self-striping yarn, you know, or it was actually, it was a variegated yarn, excuse me. It was variegated yarn. And they were marketing it as an ombre, and I'm like, oh, no. So I would say to the consumer, like, don't always trust what what you're told, because if someone bought that as an ombre and they're not going to get that look. I don't know. I mean, that was a one-off and it was completely bizarre to me, but there's definitely a trend. And I think there's a lot of companies that are, you know, wanting to capitalize on that without
the name.
Yeah.
The idea. Yeah. But I think it's also misinformation for them too. Like they are not sure what the definition is. So like ombre is what the process or the look of the colors that you described, where they kind of bleed. That's the best way I can describe it. So they kind of bleed into the next color. But with self-striping, though, that's different. Self-striping, it's like, you know, when you knit a sock and it looks as if you were knitting real stripes. Mm-hmm. And that's more defined and graphic. Mm-hmm. And then you've got variegated, which is almost like a space dye.
Yes.
If you remember the days of the space dye, you know, and so it's like you get bits of the same color throughout the whole thing, and it repeats and repeats and repeats. And sometimes it creates a pattern that you don't expect.
Slashing, but it's kind of
all over the place kind of look.
You can use that sometimes to your advantage if you plant it. So, because a lot of those are machine made. Most of them are machine made. Well, no, not most, but a lot are machine made. And if they are machine made, the pattern is so regular that you can actually, if you get your stitches a certain way and get your gauge, you know, sorted out, you can actually basically create like a plaid, you know, or whatever, because it's a completely regular machine made pattern.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It is. It's very. We could talk all day about color, but anyway. So with this has been great. We've been talking a while. This is awesome, and I know that it's getting to be lunchtime for you. So, and the dogs probably have to go out for a walk. But I wanted to ask you just a few more questions. You know, we'll kind of close. But this is for the designers listening, because we've got like the hobby knitter, the designers, the wannabe designers. So if there's someone out there wanting to kind of go down that path, you know, to become a designer, or, you know, maybe they want to try to do some hand dyeing and that sort of thing. Like what advice would you give them?
Oh, well, I would start by saying, and you and I are a good example of that, it's a very small industry. So I think, you know, I think in general, we support each other. I've known you however many years. And, you know, back then you were not the editor of a big magazine. you know, and we've gotten to know each other more and more over time. And I think, you know, it's a very small industry. We all support each other. And I think it's important to nurture those connections. I mean, it's lucky that I think we all like each other. We're not just friends because it's the business. You know,
absolutely.
I actually enjoy your company.
Yeah, I know. We're very, it's definitely a gift. It's such a beautiful industry to be a part of.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, and I mean, you know, so many people have even, you know, not necessarily, you know, not financially supported, but just lent the weight of their being support behind me, you know, had people of some great companies that I admire, and they've just, you know, said, yes, you're on the right track. And sometimes that's all you need to sort of keep going. I think also, the whole, like, do what you love and the money will follow. Don't necessarily buy into that. You know, be, you know, start as a side gig. As a, to make money as a designer, as a knitting designer, as we talked about earlier, you know, if you're knitting all your samples, you're not actually having time to design. I mean, the designers that I know that do it as a full-time job, what they're doing is designing. And as you say, you know, they pass it off to the sample knitter and say, here you go. And then they're on to the next design. So it's not necessarily the job that you think it might be, where you're sitting around at home and, you know, having cups of tea and knitting all day. You know, it's a job. And you can love it. Absolutely. But I think you have to, it may not be what you expect. And the other thing I found for myself is that all my prior life experience prior to me starting a yarn company in a roundabout way led me to what I'm doing now. After college, so I have a degree in photography, where I was in the darkroom all the time, and all that work, you know, understanding colors and saturation completely applies to dyeing yarn. It's very similar. I'm dealing with, you know, cyan, magenta, and yellow. Those are my three colors that I work with, and using those to create, you know, a rainbow of other colors. So, you know, who would have thought, you know, darkroom would equate dyeing yarn. After I left college, I was in retail, and I was in retail management, learned all about customer service, you know, running a small business, running a big business. You know, I was in charge at Macy's downtown in San Francisco in third floor. You know, I had like half of the third floor under my very youthful. I was very young.
Wow.
You know, but that's what they did then. I imagine it's different now. But it was tottering around in high heels, carrying 12. It's crazy. But, you know, so I learned a lot doing that. And then I went work for a cosmetics company. And so there was experience there. I worked for a knitwear designer, you know. And so everything sort of in this weird roundabout way has led to now. So even if you're, you know, flipping burgers, you know, you're learning something. That life has like, so there's so many lessons in life. I don't mean to get all deep and whatever, but I think I've been fortunate, and I think if other people can dig in their lives and probably find something similar too, where everything has led me to here. And this may be a stepping stone to something else that I don't know about yet, but I'm pretty settled where I am, and I've been doing it now for however many years, and I, you know, I don't feel a need to change what I do. I really like where I am now. But I find it fascinating looking back. I was like, oh yeah, because I use the knowledge from that here. Mm-hmm. I use the knowledge from this here. I mean, like photography, I love Instagram. And you know, that's my little addiction.
Don't we all? Yeah.
You know, and like I said, the darkroom, photography, the retail, you know, this, that, and the other has all brought me here. And I think there's stuff to be learned in all your universe as an individual that you can bring to this industry. And as in the quote that you read earlier, no one's going to understand what you do. How, you know, you what? You have a yarn company? What does that mean? Do you knit all day? No. You know, how can you make money doing that? No, well, actually, I have 10 employees. What? You know, it's a very not understood business. You know, when you tell people things like, actually, it used to be the man's job to do the knitting, people are sort of surprised by that. And, you know.
That's wild. Yeah. Well, that was really inspiring advice, really. And, you know, it's also about, you know, this whole thing of how everything is connected and the stepping stones. I love that analogy. And someone once described this also as bridges, creating bridges. Hmm. I love that because don't burn them, you know, well, don't burn the bridges. Yeah. And
I'm not wanted saying, to say that, you know, but I didn't want to say that, but yes, thank you for saying
but
that.
But it's true. It's like we say, ah, I'm never going to do the, thank goodness I left that career as a bookkeeper. Cause now I'm really going to, you know, design. Cause I used to be a bookkeeper. That's what I'm saying. And I remember like, oh, you know, it's like that skill helped me be a better designer because I, you know, punched numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, so something like you said, flipping burgers, whatever, but don't ever burn bridges and don't ever think that what you're doing isn't connected to what's coming next, because it is.
Well, and, you know, yeah, there's a lot of people in designers, I remember this from that Yahoo group, going back to that, who are, you know, biologists and chemists, mm-hmm. and physicists, and they bring that knowledge, and mathematicians, they bring all that into, you know, shaping a garment. One of my employees, she's, as I said earlier, she's started getting her MFA or MA, I think it is, in knitting. She's the only actual one there who has any kind of fashion experience. All of them are coming from, you know, business or science or this. So it's very strange for her because none of them have any fashion experience. So a lot of them are starting sort of from the ground up. And so she's coming in with, you know, a little bit of an advantage, but you can draw from so many things and bring it to knitting or mm-hmm. the yarn business.
Absolutely.
It's, yeah, you don't.
So amazing.
I don't know.
So from a business perspective, you know, is there a piece of advice that was given to you over, you know, at one time that just really stuck with you?
So I got this harebrained idea to start this dyeing yarn thing in 2010 mm-hmm. at the TNNA show.
Oh, wow.
It was a very slow show, and I was like, oh, what am I doing? I'm going to start dyeing yarn, because I'd already had my, you know, my design business for years, and it was sort of a bit of a downturn, I think, at the time in the industry, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to start dyeing yarn, and I'm sitting alone in my booth and just twiddling my thumbs, and everyone's walking, all these other vendors are all walking, we're all walking around, it's like a bowling alley, there's no one buying anything, and we're like, and two friends of mine walk by, and you may know them, you may not know them, it was Darlene Hayes, who used to have a yarn dyeing company, and Jean DeCoster, who owns Elemental Affects. And I was like, hey, come here, come to my booth. And I need your help. I have this idea. I want to start a hand-dyed yarn company, but I want to do self-striping yarns because that's where I got it. And Darlene said, it's going to take over your life. You will have no life. And Jean said, okay, I'll help you. And, you know, so that was the two pieces of advice, sort of advice that they got from me. And I'm now business partners with Jean. Our Merino Silk yarn that we sell, we created together, which is fabulous. And she actually taught me the actual how to dye yarn. And Darlene's advice was absolutely spot on. It has completely taken over my life. And every time I hit that dip, so to speak, I always turn back to
you remember,
Darlene telling me that. And I'm like, yep, she was right. Yep.
And that's the thing, too. You knew that before going in. And that actually, when you read this book, you've got to read it. Because mm-hmm. Seth Godin even says, he goes, before you go into something, think about, you know, how did he phrase it? Think about what you're getting into so you don't quit later. Like, you know, that you'll get to that point, you'll get to the dip and decide when you start, you know, whatever it is you need to do to not quit, you know, like remember that. I guess I'm butchering it and I'm saying it wrong, but when you read the book, you'll see what you'll be like, yeah, exactly. But that's it. You had that those words were stuck in your brain. It was like they were tattooed into your brain. It's going to take over your life. And what a kindness she gave you by just laying it out. Like, it's going to take over your life. You're not going to have a life. But it is. But
your life is over.
But you even say it in your quote, right? Mm. This is your life. Mm. In because then it's your passion. It's, of course, it's a passion. But at the same time, and you said this earlier, passion isn't enough, right? So you've got to have the
well, you have to commit.
Also the you have to commit, and also you got to have the skills. And it's a little bit more like being having a business head, and mm-hmm. and the, like you said, the commitment too. And then that's when it works. And then your passion it's still helping you get through those tough times too.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to stay hungry. You have to know when you get in those down dip times, whatever we want to call them, whatever you got to do to remember to stay hungry is important.
It's also, in addition to, you know, staying hungry, I suppose I would also keep in mind that, you know, this too shall pass. So like in your sort of, I don't want to say darkest hour, because it's, you know, there are challenging times. Everything is cyclical and things change, and there are, you know, difficult times, and there are, and I'm not talking about my difficult times are when I get too busy. And that's, I'm very fortunate in that way. And that's not always the case with a lot of businesses. The difficult times are when there's not enough business. But the other thing to keep in mind when it gets like super insane is just like, okay, this is where we're at right now, and we're just going to have to keep plowing through, keep going. And I have, you know, I mean, I've had weeks where I've worked, you know, 6-7 days a week till 11 o'clock at night. And I do hit a point where I'm like, I cannot do this anymore. After about like 8 weeks of that, I'm like, I'm going to stare at the ceiling for a day. But then I'm back there the following day. I don't ever take more than a full day. But I also look at it from where I'm at as being very fortunate, because, you know, how many people, you know, it's starting a business is not easy. And there's that, what, that 7-year thing, if you make it past 7 years or whatever. The other thing I learned too, actually, was in a random conversation, Beth Casey of Lorna's Laces and I were at the airport at the same time, which was interesting because I was coming back from a show and she was actually coming back from another thing random entirely. And I actually didn't know her at the time. This was the silliest thing. I didn't know her in person. I knew who she was, obviously. And so I'm on there and I could see she was on her phone. So I randomly sent her a Facebook message and I'm, hi Beth, I'm right behind you. We're both in the same terminal. And she turns around and she comes up and she starts talking to me. That was actually the first time that we ever really talked.
Wow. That's cool.
She is fantastic. I love her to death. And, you know, I would say we're good friends now. And I turn to her a lot for, you know, just feedback, I would say. And one of the things, you know, her company is considerably larger than mine. And one of the things I learned from her, going back to, you know, pieces of advice, I don't know if this is good or bad, but it's funny to me, is that, you know, her company, as large as it is, we have exactly the same problems. You know, it sometimes, you know, these problems that you run into, guess what? It's going to be, you know, it goes away temporarily, but it doesn't change. No matter the size of your company, you're still going to be dealing with the same stuff. The same issues are going to come up. It's just, I don't know if it's a larger scale, but, you know, some things are just, it's just the way it is. And these are just things that repeat. And I can't be specific about certain things, but she had exactly the same problems that I did. And I was like, oh, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing, but it was fascinating to me that you know.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing is too is in the beginning when you get into a business, sometimes, you know, the mindset is it's going to be so much fun, and you're not thinking about the problems. There's always going to be a problem that comes later, and that's not a bad, like, you know, you're not being a Debbie Downer by saying, oh, right, there's problems, but it's like you're just saying, oh yeah, well, there will be, and I'm okay,
yeah,
because I'm ready.
Exactly.
I'm ready for them, because you know what, when the problems come and you're like, you think, you know, you kind of deny them because you know they're going to come, right? There's going to be issues, but when they do come, you're totally like, it's like being smacked in the face, like, whoa, like, you know, like, whoa, where did that come from? And then it's like, oh no, you know? So I think that's the difference between someone that stays the course and someone that quits.
Right.
Because before you even start, you're prepared for those times that you say they're going to come.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be ever vigilant, if that makes sense.
You know what I call that? I call it stick-to-itiveness. And I have a severe case of stick-to-itiveness. I just stick, you know, I'm like, I'm just persistent. And the other thing too, actually, that just came to mind is when I first started, this is actually kind of silly. When I first started, I spent 8 weeks and I dyed 72 balls of yarn, and I was so proud of myself because, and I'd been up till 2 a.m. and I, you know, come up with these 72 balls and, you know, this fantastic self-striping yarn. I took it to a show and I went up to somebody, I don't remember, and I was like, yes, I've got 72 balls of yarn. And it took me 8 weeks and it was, you know, 16-hour days. And, but I have them. And, you know, so what's that, a ratio of ball a day or some 2 balls a day, or I don't even know. And you know, I mean, today if we did 72 balls of yarn in a day, I would be, you know, I'd be like, goodness, what are you guys doing? Come on, you know. And it's so funny to me how your ability to handle and grow is exponential. You know, stuff that a couple of years back, I was having a hard time breathing. You know, I was like so stressed, and this is when we used to be in my house, and I was having like the, I would be like, I couldn't get air, you know, and all this stuff. And a friend of mine took me to Tahoe for the weekend, and I was okay. You know, I just needed to like get away. But you know, where the business was then versus where it is now, the business is now what, 3 times the size that it was 2 years ago, which, you know, and it had grown dramatically up to 2 years ago, and now we're like triple that. And I think now, like, if I was where we were 2 years ago now, I'd be freaking out. And that, whereas at the time I thought, oh my God, we can't possibly grow any bigger, you know, whereas now it's like, now I've come to the terms with it. I'm like, oh, okay, we keep growing, you know, and I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Exactly.
And I just deal with it. And now, you know, it doesn't stress me out anymore. You grow with it.
Mm-hmm.
You just grow with it.
Yeah. Well, this was awesome. And I'm so glad that we finally did this, Tina. So how can the listeners learn more about you and Freya? You know, just kind of throw out all your web info and social, this and that, and then we'll say goodbye.
All right. So the yarn, you can see it and buy it on freyafibers.com. That's F-R-E-I-A. FIBERS.com. There is also a list there of stockists, so you can probably find it at a store near you, hopefully. And I'm constantly adding to that list, so if you need to touch it before you buy it, do check on that list every now and then. I am also, as I mentioned, on Instagram, which is my favorite thing. And that's on Instagram where Freya Fibers, basically my online presence is mostly Freya Fibers, though the company itself is Freya Fine Hand Paints. But yeah, so we're on Facebook. I'm on Facebook and Twitter as Knitwits, which is my like umbrella company. And that's just Knitwhits. And there's also a page for Freya Yarns on Facebook, but if you want to see the most up-to-date thing, Instagram or our website. And there is also a link on our website to sign up for a newsletter that we send out sporadically when we have time. I always want to send it out more often than we do, but we don't. So you won't get inundated by mail from us because we're just not very good at it. But it is a good way to keep in touch with new colors, new patterns, and stuff. We do have like a pattern of the week that we send out, not quite every week, but we try. And if you want to get in touch with me, you could email us at the studio. Email would be studio@freyafibers.com. If I can answer any questions for you, I don't know if I'm of use.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, this was great. Thank you for joining me today,
Tina.
Thank you.
It was fun. I want to talk more. No.
I know. Well, yes, I know. We have a good time.
Yes.
So, but we'll have to have you on. We'll have to have another conversation, or of course, we'll talk. We'll talk at the next show, right?
Hey, that's right.
I know. It'll be here before you know it.
No. Well, it's in my backyard this next time, so it's great. Cuz it's
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it's just a couple hours from my house, which is great.
That's great. All right, Tina. Well, I'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you so much.
I know you love Power Pearls, or you wouldn't be listening to my voice right now. So here's what I need from you as a loyal listener. Power Pearls is a free show, and I want to keep it that way, so I need your support. So how, you may be wondering? Well, you can actually become a sponsor of the show, and this will make you very instrumental to keeping this show sustainable in the long term. So here's what you can do. visit patreon.com/powerpearlspodcast, and you can become a patron at $1, at $5, or whatever price works for your budget. And guess what? I've got some swag for you. Yes, I have rewards, so you can check them out there. So for example, I'll just give you a little kind of tidbit about that. At the $5 level, you get my patron-only podcast workshop called The Secret Sauce to a Thriving Creative Business. In this informative recording, you'll discover how to recognize your creative skills and talents and how to capitalize on them in order to cultivate the life and business you desire. So visit and check out more rewards at patreon.com/powerpearlspodcast. And thanks to all of you who are already supporting the show. Your generosity means so much more than you know. Hey, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I always enjoy spending time with Tina and being able to chat with her. And, you know, usually we don't get a chance these days because I usually only see her at all of the, you know, the big trade shows and the consumer shows. So after we signed off, you know, she said, "Hey, you know, I really want to give a special discount to your listeners." So she has this new merino yarn, and it is a fingering weight. Now, it's not going to be available until September, but she has some samples on hand. She has a limited quantity on hand, and she'd like to do a special discount. So normally, when this retails, which will be in September, each ball will be about $38. But for the Power Pearls listeners, it's going to be $30 a ball. Now, you can get a shawl from one of these balls. So she's calling these shawl balls because just one ball is what you need, all you need to make a shawl. I mean, that's a pretty good deal for $30, I'd say. And just so you know, the $30 does not include tax or shipping, but still awesome deal, right? So act fast because there's only going to be about five colors available, and there's 10 balls. She has 10 balls available in each color, and they will not be widely available until September, as I said. So you don't want to miss this limited time only offer. So act fast by going to freyafibers.com/powerpearls. And Freya is spelled F-R-E-I-A fibers. freyafibers.com/powerpearls. And with that, I'll see you next time.